some listeners. Listen at your own risk. Welcome back to Hell and Tales Podcast. I'm Bryce.
I'm Amanda.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm stressed.
Oh, I heard. So, is there more?
Well, I mean, I'm just stressed because the boys have their circumcisions tomorrow, so they have surgery tomorrow.
Oh.
Yeah. So the boys have surgery tomorrow. No big deal. It's fine.
Routine.
It is a routine surgery. It's just stressful because of when they can eat. So it's not like we can put them to bed and then take them in the morning and then it's about them eating, because when we put them to bed, we're going to give them their bottle. And then we're trying to decide, do we do a formula bottle at 1:30 in the morning and then nothing else? Or do we do a breast milk bottle at 3 in the morning and then nothing else? It's just one of those things where we're back and forth.
Do they eat cereal?
Yeah, but they can't have any solid food after.
Gotcha. Okay, so how does that go for, are they 6 months now?
Almost 8.
Jesus Christ. Okay, my bad. Sorry, boys. I'm not good at math. So how does that work? Because for like when we got Lee, he was not even 24 hours old. So it was like they just put a rubber band on it. Not a rubber band. But.
Okay. So the circumcisions are different. So this is how it was explained to us by, I don't remember which doctor, one of the doctors. And I could be misquoting. I'm so sorry if I am, but this is how it was explained.
Mm-hmm.
They have to do it when they do it in office, like what you did with Lee.
Right.
It is, you have to do it within 30 days of birth. Mm-hmm. That's when insurance covers it. And also, I guess they say there's less feeling, like their nerve connectors or whatever don't have it fully connected. And then after that 30 days, it's like, you gotta wait until they're 6 months old.
Yeah. And now they're whole ass baby.
Well, we had to wait until they were 6 months adjusted. So we didn't even have an opportunity to do it in office because the NICU doesn't do it. Period. End of story. Mm-hmm. They don't do it.
They got bigger fish to fry.
Right. And so the boys were in NICU for 29 days.
Oh my God.
Yeah. 29 days. So anyways, so the day that we took them in was like the cutoff and we couldn't, the doctor's like, I can't do the procedure today. And we're like, okay, well, that's fine. I didn't ask you to.
Yeah.
And so we had to wait until they were 6 months adjusted, which happened in January 12th, 15th, whichever doctor you want to go by. Anyways, so all of that. So now the doctors, they're actually going to have to go under some sort of anesthesia. I'm not clear on what the different types are. One of them, when they explained it, I would kind of say it was more like a C-section where they kind of numb up the lower half of their body and then do it while they're still somewhat awake.
Okay.
The other one is actually, you know, full on anesthesia, sleep type of thing. That's how I understood it. That was also September that they explained that to us. So I don't know what type of anesthesia they're going to do. They'll decide that tomorrow. And then the doctor, he used this terminology and I don't know if it should stress me out, but it does. Cause he said he's going to freehand cut it.
I don't love that.
I'm not the only one. It makes me anxious for some reason.
Like that's my child's sensitive area. I don't.
And you're going to freehand it?
And see, that's why I was curious, because like Lee was still in that age. So they put, like, it wasn't a rubber band, but it was a rubber comma band or a rubber band. it was a rubber space band that they put on it. And they're basic. I was like, okay, so what do I need to do here? Do I need to clean it? Do I need to do that? And they're like, no, just, you know, don't let it get ridiculously dirty and it'll fall off. And I'm like, we have an umbilical cord in the diaper now. Like, and yeah, that's all we had to do. But I assume because they're so much older and substantial human wise, that's a little different. Did not know it was a freehand thing.
Yeah. So they'll each be in surgery for, it's allotted for 65 minutes for each of them.
That's a slow hand.
Well, you know what? I'd rather it be a slow freehand than a quick freehand.
Okay, you know what? Fair. Yeah.
So that's going on. So we're a little stressed about that, trying to figure out feeding schedules and all that fun stuff for the night. But aside from everything else this month, that's the stressor on my plate right now. Everything else can be ignored because not everything is a me problem.
Okay.
And what Amanda's referring to is I sent her a whole long message with, let's just recap what's happened this month. And it was just a list ongoing. And then this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. It was, yeah, it's been a rough month.
Yeah. It literally, like, I think I was on a phone call at the time, and I have two monitors at work. And so I had you up on the other one, and I'm, like, typing, and I'm like, she's still adding. She's still adding.
She's still typing. She's still typing.
I was like, oh my God, I put it behind my email. I was like, I'll come back to you. I'm sorry. Let me know when you're done. Sending me like 14 bullets.
But yeah, so that was the rough. That's the roughness right now. The other stuff, I don't know if I'm mentally prepared to talk about.
Okay, that's fair.
I can only do one stressor at a time right now.
That, okay, yeah. You know what? I like that. Keep it simple.
Yeah, keep it easy. I will say I have the next 2 days off of work, so I can look after the boys. Doesn't mean much. I mean, I'm going to be working anyways. Me and the boys, busy. But.
Well, hopefully it all goes well. I will say every time I go under, at least once a year for my yearly colonoscopy, best nap I have ever paid for.
They're not going to agree.
They might actually sleep like a baby for one. How that term is meant to be said, which is still confusing to me. You know what?
They sleep through the night now.
Oh, praise.
Where's some wood? Cody, knock on some wood for me right this very second.
I'm knocking on two separate particle boards.
Okay, we're fine.
Or whatever they call this stuff that's not wood and not cork.
Yeah. They've been sleeping through the night again for now. Thank God.
It was me. Sorry, the dog's on alert now.
Oh. Anyways, how are you?
Let's see. Oh my God, I'm so good. So I sent you a very loud Snapchat the other day. And I didn't tell you what it was, right?
I was very confused because you kept saying, can you hear it? And I was like, nope. Hear a vacuum.
Okay. So I'm going to show you what that was.
Unless I was not prepared. Annie vacuuming, I'm not going to be impressed.
Well, it wasn't Annie, but you may still be impressed.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, first, this happened.
Are you sending it to me?
I text it to you.
Okay. Oh. My God, you bougie bitch.
So that is not
what I think it is.
It's exactly what you think it is.
That there's no way.
We got a dishwasher.
Oh my God, you bougie bitch.
Oh no. I never use this term, okay? We are so blessed.
You're realizing how much hand washing takes of your night hand washing dishes?
Okay. When they install, okay, so the reason I say we're so blessed is because, just take a guess, how much we paid for that thing.
Was it free? Was it a Christmas present?
It was free. It was, a combination anniversary and James's birthday, I think. Anniversary, James's birthday, my birthday. It was a combination of a bunch of stuff. His parents bought it for us. And his brother and cousin are freaking handymen. So they were like, well, we'll put it in. And we were so happy. So that's what that sound was renovation, I believe is the term.
Yeah, that's the renovation. Yeah.
They were cutting my kitchen apart.
Space for your dishwasher. Mm-hmm.
So wow. That was Saturday. And then Sunday, this happened.
You got a leak. They're not great handymen, okay?
So, I thought it was the funniest thing in the world because his brother was literally like, you know, this is a whirlpool. Like, this will last you forever as long as you take care of it. And then he stopped and he was like, well, this one will last you forever as long as you take care of it. Because yes, the one that we got, they installed it, it leaked. So they They had to take it out. They came back Sunday. They took it out. By the way, Buck hated every minute of it. Hated it. They would like come and like peek their head in the living room and be like, hey, you know, y'all come look at this, or we've got to do this. Every single time Buck is like, get away from my kids. I am mean. I am angry. He's not. He'll pee himself before he bites anybody. But so yeah, we got two new dishwashers this weekend.
I mean, one of them's garbage.
Oh yeah, I don't know where that thing is, but I think it was a seal is what we think it was that was leaking, which is why the towel was in front of it. But yeah, we have a dishwasher and it is so amazing because we used to hand wash. So our kitchen was cluttered at all times because of the dishes drying. Dishes. Yeah. Yeah, they're sitting there drying. If I have to hand wash a dish, I ain't hand drying the thing.
Oh, listen, but, I get it. Our dishwasher was broken for 6 or 7 years. And then we had babies and the bottles got overwhelming and we said, no more of that.
Oh, yeah. That got old fast, I'm sure.
Yeah, real fast. We were like, let's fix that.
When they installed it, we literally asked them, like, this isn't going to be an issue, right? Because we left dishes in the sink for the test run. And the second one was awesome.
The second test run, yes. Two thumbs up.
Yes, the first one. And to be fair, it wasn't a bad leak. Like, the towel in front of the floor, like, you can't even see water on the floor.
No, you can't.
And then, he also renovated, you can't see it, but we also got a fancy new switch for our garbage disposal. And here's a short video I can show you. So we got a fancy new setup for our garbage disposal because it was, you would turn it on and off with a light switch by the sink on the wall. Well,
no minus.
I've told you before, our house was built in 66. So the wiring is abhorrent here. It makes absolutely no sense. When we installed the doorbell, which is right over here on the other side of this wall on the, east side of the house. Yeah, actually, the east side of the house. And we cut the breaker for that, and that was turned off, along with the bathroom on the far west side of the house. Make it make sense. I don't know.
That's what our house sounds like. Turn one thing off and be like, why is there six other things off?
That aren't even in the same general area.
Yeah.
What were you doing, 66 electronics? Electrician. That was the word.
You got it. You figured it out.
Yeah. But yeah, it was basically, instead of pulling out the half of the wall and the entire counter, he was like, well, I can just do this. So he literally just installed a junction and put a switch and put one of those, like, I don't know what it's called, but it keeps like water out of outlets and stuff outside.
Like a cover.
Yeah. And so the cover on that is really heavy and it snaps back pretty hard, so the kids can't open it
yet
because it's kind of like on the front of the cabinet, which honestly, yeah. I like that more. It's way more natural if I'm not doing dishes but maybe rinsing them and I have to click the disposal. It's so much more natural because it's right there by my hip. Mm-hmm. I don't have to reach. I like it.
Well, look at you, all bougie and stuff. A new switch, a new dishwasher.
I don't know what to do with myself. Not dishes. I know that.
God, think about how much more. Now I know why you were organizing that space.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But think about how much free time you are going to have now for activities.
I don't know what I'm going to do with my. Yeah, I do. Last night I cleaned.
Oh, I was going to say, well, I know what we can do with that free time is you get to hear a story.
Love it. I'm here for it. Okay. Wait, are you going to tell me about socials first?
Well, yeah, I'm going to tell you about socials. I have a little bit of a longer story, so let's do socials.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. My notes aren't up. Hold on. Time out. I just realized my notes aren't up. Okay, so not socials. Sorry. No, we can talk about socials while I'm pulling my notes up. Okay, socials. We got them all. We got Instagram, Facebook, X. We got everything that you can dream of. Well, I guess we have it. We may not post everywhere, but we post pictures, Instagram, Facebook, X. Those get posted there. So when we refer to pictures, You can find them on those three platforms. If you can't find us there, then you can go ahead and go on to Linktree or just Google Helen Hills Podcast. Linktree will come right up. Okay. And then we have our email. So if you have suggestions, comments, whatever, HelenHillsPodcast@gmail.com. And then I think that's really like all the socials we have. So you ready to get into a story?
Yes. Because I don't know this guy.
Okay. Well,
I don't think.
Have I ever told you about how much anxiety I get at hospitals?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Well, I get specifically when they were in the NICU, I think.
Well, that was a different type of anxiety. I get a lot of anxiety because of this case.
Oh.
So when I think about nurses, I think they should be helping save people's lives.
Oh no! Is he a?
For what Charles do they call him? Cullen, he's not what that nurse was. He did the opposite. So before I go on, if you are having any suicidal thoughts or ideations, please contact someone, get the help you need, the suicide hotline, friends, family, whoever, just get the help you need. I say that because I do mention several attempted suicides in this episode, so please just be aware this is your trigger warning. If you guys do need help, please reach out to someone. So we're going to be talking about Charles Edmund Cullen. He was born on February 22nd, 1930. He was born in West Orange, New Jersey. His family was a working class Catholic family. It was a large family. Charles was the youngest of 8 children.
No. No. You gotta, like, that's too many. That's you're way outnumbered.
Well, it gets worse because the outnumber really, really gets effed up because Charles's father, Edmund, he was a bus driver. Charles really never was able to get to know his father because Edmund would pass away September 17th of 1960. Charles was just 7 months old.
Seven months? Oh my God.
So his mother,
poor woman.
Right. His mother, Florence Cullen, she was born in England. She had come to the U.S. after World War II. She emigrated to the U.S. as what was, you know, a war bride. She found love during the war, came to the U.S., all that fun stuff. From what I can find, she did what she could to raise 8 kids alone. Charles, however, would still describe his childhood as miserable. He claimed that he was constantly bullied by classmates, siblings, and by his sister's boyfriends, and it was just so horrible. He claims that the bullying was so severe that his first suicide attempt would be at the age of 9 years old, which is just really sad that a 9-year-old didn't have the support they needed to help them through it. And that's not a dig at his mom at all. Like, different times, different emphasis on mental health. It's very different times.
For a 9-year-old to be in that headspace, just, well, I mean, you know, for anyone to be in that headspace, but you're 9. You're supposed to be, like, focused on hide and seek and stuff.
Yeah, instead he attempted suicide by mixing a bunch of chemicals from a chemistry set and drinking them.
Oh, God.
So, not a great start. Now, the tragedies of Charles Cullen's life, they're not through, because when he was 17 years old, he would lose his mom. On December 6, 1977, Florence was killed in a car accident. So, Bryce. Rough start.
Oh, who took care of him?
Well, he had 7 older siblings.
Yeah, but he didn't really sound like they got along the best growing up. I mean, I assume you got to get along with 1 out of 7.
And he was 17.
Okay, so he was probably at this, and his mom raised them by herself. I assume he's probably pretty independent, maybe?
I assume so. But he also talked about, so he's a senior in high school at the time he loses his mom, and he lost her to a car accident. And he recalled his mother's passing as being what he called devastating. Don't blame him. He also described his frustration that the hospital, according to him, had not immediately informed him or his family of her death. And rather than returning her body to the family, they actually cremated his mother.
They didn't even give them the choice. Like, what if that's not what she wanted?
Okay, keep in mind, this is what I could find reported by Charles Cullen.
Do we trust him?
Did you hear how I started this episode?
Okay, fair. Okay. I mean, fair point. I mean, even serial killers, some of them are very honest.
Yeah. Well, I assume at some point he's honest. To some point, okay, to a T. So he's really just got, like, trauma piled on top of trauma and all of that fun stuff, right? Like, it's kind of insane for him. So he would graduate West Orange High School in 1978, and afterwards he would enlist in the Navy. He would serve on the submarine USS Woodrow Wilson. In order for him to serve on a submarine, that means he had to pass basic training and a psychological exam, like that's required of every crewman. to be on this submarine. So he passed those two things. And Charles Cullen, he would raise to the rank of petty officer during his time in the Navy. He would operate the vessel's Poseidon missiles. Now, you would think that maybe this time in the military for him was like growth, or, you know, gave him a reprieve from the bullying and the trauma in his childhood. But unfortunately, that was not the case, because quite frankly, boys are dunks. And I'm assuming you have probably a lot of 18, 19, 20-year-old boys on a submarine. And they all thought Charles Cullen was a little weird. And so they hazed and bullied him while in the Navy as well.
Good God. Y'all, his parents died. Like, come on.
He is an orphan.
Jeez.
Leave him be.
You don't have anything else to do in a big metal room on floating on the ocean? Can't think of, you can't play cards? Read a book?
No, absolutely not. So, a year into his Navy career, Charles Cullen is faced with disciplinary action. So this was a little weird. He was found at his mission control, or his missile controls, which that's not the unusual part, but what's unusual was his chosen outfit of the day. He was wearing a surgical mask, gloves, and scrubs rather than his, you know, required uniform.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know why?
He never explained why he dressed that way. And he just, like, they wrote him up and were like, we don't know what's going on with you. And after, he was actually reassigned to a lower pressure job, and he was assigned to the supply ship USS Canopus. So
he literally just, like, they're like, I don't know how the Navy works, but I assume they call everybody to the deck of the ship and, you know, make them stand with their hands behind their backs in those lines, typical U.S. military, and everyone's in uniform, and he's just
in... No, because he was at the missile station. He was at where he was supposed to be.
Oh, so he went to work dressed for a completely different... So he was just dressing for the job he wanted, not the one he had.
That's also a concern. We'll talk more.
Oh, okay. Oh, God, he's a nurse. Bad joke. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, he never explained why he dressed that way. He's reassigned. And over the next few years, he struggles severely with his mental health, where he attempts suicide. He would actually be committed to the Navy psych ward several times. And he's just struggling, right? He's not doing well. Ultimately, Charles Cullen would receive a medical discharge from the Navy in 1984, and officially it was for undisclosed reasons. So it was a medical discharge for undisclosed reasons. I assume it was probably for his mental health. After this discharge, he would enroll at Mountainside Hospital's nursing program in Montclair, New Jersey.
Okay.
He must have been somewhat likable in this program because he was elected the president of the nursing class. Oh. And he graduated in 1987, so 3 to 4 years after starting.
So maybe he just found his peers. Maybe they were all a little weird.
Possibly. After graduation, he would begin working at the burn unit in St. Barnabas Medical Center in Livingston, New Jersey. And during this time, he would also meet Adrienne Baum, and they would fall in love, get married in 1987. They would have their first daughter in 1987. They do have two total, but I didn't see when the second one was born. Now, Adrienne, I don't know if it's Adrienne or Adrian, but I'm reading this as Adrienne. She would note some unsettling behavior from her now husband, Charles Cullen. Specifically that he was abusive to the family dog. Uh-oh. And he was
Sorry. That's
a major break it. Bye.
You know the guy on TikTok that runs around with the giant red flag? Somebody call him.
Okay, we'll call him today.
Okay.
Green flag guy. Red flag
Dustin?
Guy. I don't remember his name. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
So not only that, but his increasingly violent behavior towards Adrienne and their children, she eventually files a restraining order against Charles Cullen. And she had it based on, so she had her restraining order filed based on her fear that he might endanger her and their children. So these are some of her claims. She claims that he burned his daughter's books, left his daughters with babysitters for a week, and that Charles Cullen just kind of spiked people's drinks with lighter fluids.
What is that supposed to do? Give you horrible digestive problems? Okay. It took about 7 swipes, but Bryce had the like thumb across her neck going, and I'm just trying to figure out like, that's what? That did you say a playful habit?
No, I did not say a playful habit.
Oh, I guess I'll put that in there. I was expecting you to say a play, like Visine or something, you know, still not healthy, still don't do it,
Amanda's, but it's going to give you the runs. You're just hoping for something more practical, jokey.
Right, yeah, not like, huh, well, you took your hand off the cover, the top of your drink for 6.2 seconds, now you're going to die.
Well, listen, he claims that his wife exaggerated these claims. Hold on, though, because to me, exaggeration means that there's some truth to it.
Oh.
Right?
Okay,
that's an
yeah.
exaggerated claim, not that didn't happen. So I question how much of that is true, though I do think it's probably all true. So she, Adrienne, she's like, no, he's cuckoo-ca-choo. He is mentally ill. We can't be around him. So Charles Cullen, he's had a rough life. Yeah, he was a weird dude and apparently abusive to his family. So would it shock you to hear that he has a dirty secret? It's not really that big of a secret. But on June 11th, 1988, Charles Cullen takes the life of his first patient.
What? No.
I do not have all of the patient's names. I actually don't have any of the patient's names. There were two named, but I've decided to keep all of them unnamed. So he takes the life of his first patient. And so he's working at St. Barnabas. He would administer a lethal dose of intravenous medication to a patient. And this is not his only murder at St. Barnabas. He would claim to give an overdose of insulin to an AIDS patient that also took their life. And before anyone could fire him or even accuse him of killing these people, he would leave the hospital in 1992. He left after hospital authorities actually began an internal investigation about the contaminated IV bags that were being used. And those were the bags that Charles Cullen contaminated in order to murder his patients.
So he just left them there?
He's like, bye.
Oh, okay. So good luck, losers.
So the hospital would conclude their investigation, and they said that Charles Cullen most likely contaminated the bags, and it did result in the deaths of dozens of patients in the hospital. Not great. But they move on. He's gone. And he gets a new job at Warren Hospital in Phillipsburg, New Jersey. Here he would murder at least three elderly women by overdosing them with I looked this up and now I'm blanking on how to say it. Digoxin?
I think it's digoxin.
Something like that. It's a heart medication. I looked it up a few days ago and now I can't remember how to say it.
I want to say it's something that's not how it looks.
Digoxin.
Like, I've heard it before and I was like, that's not how that's. Digoxin, maybe?
Digoxin.
Okay, digoxin. We're smart. We got this.
Thanks, Google. So he leaves. He doesn't blah, blah, blah. So that is a heart medication. And the last of his victims in this hospital, before they died, they actually told family members and hospital staff that, quote, a sneaky male nurse had injected her in her sleep. So, like, she knew something happened before she passed away, but her statements were dismissed as unfounded. Like, people are like, you're losing him. You're losing a lady.
Oh.
Now, at this point in his life, he is going through the divorce in 1993. So he moves into a basement apartment, and through the legal proceedings of his divorce, he is now given court ordered child support payments. Like, he's ordered to pay child support. And according to Charles, he wanted to quit nursing at this time. He didn't want to do it, but due to the child support payments he had to pay, he had to continue working. So he probably feels like he's losing everything. He's lost his wife, his children, his home, his money. Thank God he's lost all of those. He's lost his job. He's not able to go to work and murder people since that one woman called him out. So what's man got to do? Well, he breaks into his coworker's apartment. His coworker was a single mother, had one son. Breaks in, leaves without waking them up, and then just kind of starts stalking her like it's no big deal.
Okay, I was going to say, like, okay, cool. Like, he left him alone, but he couldn't even do that.
No.
He stole her stuff, though?
Not that I saw.
What? So, what's the point? You just needed a hobby?
That's not the hobby I would choose.
I would not recommend that to anybody.
Yeah, I don't recommend it. I do recommend if someone has taken up a hobby of stalking you, call the police.
Yes. Yes.
So the woman does file a police report against him. And he does end up pleading guilty to trespassing, and he's given 1 year probation. But after his arrest, like the day after his arrest, he does attempt suicide again. So he takes 2 months off of work. He's being treated for depression. And at the time, it was at 2 different psychiatric facilities. I think he was in and out of them.
Okay.
So he goes back to work after 2 months at the same hospital that the coworker he was talking was from. And
why is that allowed?
Don't ask me.
What is
the different times? Okay.
What year was this again? Roughly.
This was in the '90s. So this is like 93.
Oh, okay.
So September, a 91-year-old cancer patient would report Cullen to the hospital. Cullen was not her assigned nurse, but she claimed that he had come into her room and injected her with a needle. And this patient would lose her life the following day. And her family would insist her death was not natural. And they would pressure the hospital. The hospital would administer a lie detector test to several other nurses, as well as Charles Cullen. Charles Cullen passed the lie detector test. So they're like, no foul play.
Okay. I know this was a different time, and like, we didn't really know the bunkness of lie detectors back then. But also, like, this guy stalked a woman that worked for you, pled guilty to trespassing in her house, and now had a patient accuse him of injecting her with a needle when he had no reason to be anywhere near her, and then she died the next day. And they're just like, well, I mean, yeah, but he passed the lie detector test, so obviously he's fine. He's great.
Fine. You guys don't understand. It's just he's Charles.
He's such a good nurse. Give him more patients.
He's fine.
Jeez.
So, yeah, he's something else. So he passes the lie detector, cleared of any blame. Before the end of 93, he would attempt suicide at least 2 more times. He would continue working at Warren Hospital up until the spring of 1994, and then he would begin working the ICU of the Hunterdon Medical Center in Flemington, New Jersey. According to Charles Cullen, during his first 2 years here, he would not hug anyone. But his third and final year here is another story. Unfortunately, by the time that he is caught and arrested, hospital records for this hospital had already been destroyed, so we only know what Charles Cullen tells us for it, so we only have his word for it. Okay. Now, according to Charles Cullen, he murdered 5 patients between January and September 1996 with the overdose of
Digoxin.
He would find work after that at Morristown Memorial Hospital. Fortunately for the patients here, he was fired from that hospital pretty quickly due to poor performance.
Ah, so someone's on it.
Mm-hmm. So he was fired, remained unemployed for 6 months. During that 6 months, he would stop making child support payments, and he would seek treatment for depression and was very briefly admitted to the Warren Hospital psychiatric facility. Finally, in February of 1998, he would get a new position at the Liberty Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Allentown, Pennsylvania. He was in a position in the ward of the respirator-dependent patients.
That feels like a horrible place for any word that has dependent with this guy. Mm-hmm. Just no.
I just think a person being around this guy is not a great idea.
Yeah. He should just be on an island by himself until he dies.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
Well, maybe him and some tigers.
Well, we'll talk. So here he would cause the death of at least one patient. And this lucky son of a bitch would get away with it because
what?
Another nurse got the blame for it. Yeah.
So this two victims.
Yeah, 2 victims.
Oh my
So he is accused of giving patients drugs at unscheduled times. And this place was like, we don't appreciate your antics. And someone would witness him entering a patient's room with syringes in his hand. And that patient would end up with a broken arm. And Liberty Nursing was like, all right, none. Bye. And they do fire him. They're like, we're having none of your antics. That one dude from 6 months ago already killed a guy. You're here breaking arms. We can't do it. So they fire him, even though it was really him. So somehow he keeps getting new jobs. He then gets a position at Easton Hospital in November 1998. He would strike again December 1998, only a month in.
I'm begging somebody to do a reference check. Anybody. Janitor, even. Just call.
In this case, a coroner's blood test would show that his patient had lethal amounts of digoxin in the patient's blood. But the investigation did not conclude that Charles Cullen was responsible. There's just really no evidence to say he was responsible, right? So it was like, well, it could have been. Can't prove it. So Charles Cullen, he keeps his position there until March 1999. Then he gets a position at the burn unit in Lehigh Valley Hospital. Here, one patient, they lose their life at the hands of Charles Cullen, and he would attempt to murder another person. He's like getting worse at this because now he's getting attempted, right? Like you're seeing him not being successful, thank God. But he was fired. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He was not fired. Before he could be fired, he would resign. He was only there for a month. A single month. And then he gets another position at the cardiac care unit at St. Luke's Hospital in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So he's now at St. Luke's just doing his dirty work because he is there for 3 years.
Oh.
During these years, we know of at least 5 patients that were victims of Charles Cullen and another 2 victims that he attempted to kill. On January 11th, 2000, he would attempt suicide again. So he would light a charcoal grill in his bathtub and he was hoping to succumb from carbon monoxide poisoning. I was a little confused. It seemed complicated.
No, I'm glad because I'm sitting here like, where's that? He's not even smart enough to use a toaster. Like, I've never in my life heard of anybody putting a grill in the bathtub with it. But I guess he's pretty cowardly, and I don't know. I don't want to say that. I was going to say, like, he wants to take the easy way out, but I don't know how else to put it.
Okay, I know. To me, this seemed more attention-seeking. Not necessarily, I don't want to call it cowardly, because, again, you guys, suicide is a very serious topic. Like, I'm not trying to dismiss anyone's mental health here. Mm-hmm. And he had a lot of unresolved trauma, obviously. But I feel like at this point, and the method he used, it seemed complicated.
I think I agree with you on the attention seeking part, because it just does not make any kind of sense to me.
Yeah, I don't get it. I'm also not a nurse. I don't know
what
burning charcoal in an enclosed room and how long. I don't know any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe it was a really smart move. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But you guys, I don't recommend doing it. His neighbors could smell the smoke and they called emergency services. He'd be taken to a hospital in a psychiatric facility, but he was released and back to work the next day. The day after he tries to commit suicide, he is back to work.
That is the most American workforce thing I've ever heard of in my life.
Now, at this point, no one, I mean, we'll talk more, but no one has officially like called him out for like killing his patients. But one of his co-workers is a little concerned because they do find some vials in a disposal bin. But what really piqued their interest was that these were vials for medications that like are not used for like street or recreational use. Like, there would be no reason for someone to get these drugs. They're only valuable in the hospital.
Huh.
And there's, you know, they're in a weird spot, not where you would expect. And so there's just no reason they would be there. So there is an investigation launched. And they found that Cullen had taken the medication. Now, it's unclear if this investigation led them to believe that he was killing patients. I assume it was believed that he was. I just think that it was likely they did not have enough evidence. But they would not call the authorities.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So instead,
why would you do that?
Well, instead, they offer him a deal. They say, we can fire you or hear us out. You can resign and we'll just give you a neutral work recommendation.
Why would you give him?
We'll talk. Don't worry.
First of all, what does it really matter? Because nobody's checking the recommendation.
I mean, we'll talk, okay? So he does choose to resign. And in June 2022, he's escorted out of the facility by security guards. Now, he didn't get out of there completely scot-free because 7 of his previous co-workers from St. Luke's were like, fuck no.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely not.
Hell yeah.
And they do. So hospital officials didn't contact any official, any authorities of any sort. But these 7 other nurses... They contacted Lehigh County District Attorney, and they shared their suspicions of Charles Cullen and what he was doing, and that he was likely killing his patients.
Those are real nurses. Those people care about people.
Those ones, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So this, unfortunately, is dropped 9 months later due to lack of evidence. And I do feel like they maybe dropped the ball a little bit because they didn't look into his past from what I could find.
What? Uh-huh. I thought you said they investigated.
I don't know what they investigated, but maybe they had a bigger fish to fry at the time. I don't know. So Charles Cullen, he is free to keep working, and he does. So now you might be wondering, how in the hell does this dude keep getting nursing positions?
I'm wondering how many hospitals are in Pennsylvania at this point.
Well, it's between New Jersey and Pennsylvania, so he's in two states.
Okay, but still, it can't be that many, right?
Apparently, there's a lot. Because he... Well, we'll talk. So, at the time, and I feel like this is all the time, but there was a national shortage of nurses. So, desperate times call for desperate measures. We need nurses, all hands on deck. And also at the time, there was no system that helped identify nurses with mental health issues or employment problems, right? So there's nothing, they can't just like get on the Googler and be like, how's Charles Cullen doing with his...
They can't just research his social media to see what his mental's like.
They can't go on and be like, you've been at 17 different hospitals. 17, are you kidding me? So... There is that, and then also there's some liability concerns as well at the time that hospitals had. If they did contact authorities, fired him, whatever it was, they had some liability concerns. And so a lot of times you saw those hospitals kind of turning a blind eye and not taking action so that they could avoid lawsuits.
Okay, hear me out. I see where they're coming from. Sure, that is a liability. He is also a liability to people's literal freaking lives. So, don't care about your potential financial loss on this situation here.
I don't know what to tell you. But what I can tell you is that this hospital doesn't take action against him. And he starts working at Somerset Medical Center in the critical care unit in September of 2002. By mid-2003, he would kill at least 13 patients and had attempted to kill at least one more. And again, he's using digoxin, insulin, and epinephrine.
And you said he killed 13 successfully and tried to kill one.
Yeah, he started September 2002, and by mid-2003, he has 14 victims.
Good.
So, like,
2002 to in a year?
Less than a year.
Oh, yeah, so, you're right. I'm sorry. I was focused on the numbers. Oh, my.
Yeah.
He's spiraling.
Yeah, he is. Now, mid-2003, by this time, he's already started dating a new woman. He's got a love life going. But depression is worsening. And he's fighting through depression. He's got a new girly. He's casually murdering his patients. Just all sorts of things. Dude has a lot of different stressors than me, but those are stressors I don't think anyone wants. So Somerset Medical Center, they start seeing some red flags with Charles Cullen. They notice a few things. They notice that he is accessing records of patients that he is not assigned to. He is requesting medications that his patients were not prescribed, because they had a computerized drug dispensing cabinet that kept these records. They also saw he would have drug requests, like the order put in and they were immediately canceled. And then he would just repeatedly add the request and cancel them within minutes of one another. So I envision this as him putting in like insulin, canceling it, putting insulin again, canceling it, putting insulin in, like just within a couple minutes. So I wonder if like that was maybe an internal fight he was having with himself when he was choosing to do terrible things. But they also noticed he was accessing rooms of patients he was not assigned.
So he's doing some really sketchy stuff.
Yeah. In July 2003, an executive director of the New Jersey Poison and Education System actually reaches out to Somerset officials, and he notifies them that at least 4 suspicious overdoses had happened. And he indicated that it was a possibility that an employee was killing their patient.
Hey.
Somerset just kind of goes on. Okay.
Okay.
I couldn't find anything that said they ever opened an investigation. I don't know what happened there. So Charles Cullen, he's able to kill 5 more patients by October. This was August that they told him of the 4 suspicious overdoses. July. That was July. And he's able to kill 5 more patients by October. And another attempted murder.
So he's averaging more than 1 a month at this point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So a patient would pass of low blood sugar in October 2003. And that's kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, because now Somerset notifies New Jersey State Police. I believe they did this under the pretense that it was a suspicious death and that it was just guidelines. They had to do that. Thank God they finally did that, though, because that was his final victim. Police would now be involved, and these guys do their job. They begin looking into his past history, both employment and otherwise, and they find pretty quickly that his employment history was littered with past suspicions of his involvement of patients' deaths.
Finally, a full investigation.
Yeah. So they're doing their investigation. They decide to keep him under surveillance, and they have him under surveillance for weeks while they're doing their investigation. Somerset Hospital finally takes action, and they fire Charles Cullen on October 31st, 2003. They claimed it was for lying on his job application. So they said, you lied on your job application. Bye-bye.
And did they do this so they wouldn't, like, make him suspicious? Oh.
No, they did this to try to just part ways with him. They also didn't want him with their patients anymore at this point.
Yeah. I guess that's not the worst way to do it, because if you make him mad, I guess he may act out on the way out.
Yeah. I don't feel bad for this hospital. They were reprimanded by authorities for not reporting a non-fatal insulin overdose that was done in August that was also administered by Charles Cullen. So
you said a non-fatal one?
Yeah, non-fatal.
Okay.
So authorities are like, why didn't you guys report this?
Good question.
There's a lot of
I would love to hear the reason, though, like their reason.
We'll talk more. Lot to do with legal action. Mm-hmm. They're just concerned about at the time. I'll give you a little idea. I'll just talk about it now. At the time that they were living in, hospitals were very fearful that employees could very easily sue them if they gave details to another employer or anything like that. They were worried about the fines that could be imposed. Things like that. And they just, instead of dealing with it, they just were like, okay, turning a blind eye, we're not going to face a lawsuit.
This may be a random question. Okay. Was this before, what is it called? Tort laws? They came around, like Stella Liebeck, the hot coffee lady, they used her as an example to like try to pass these laws. So it's laws that say you can only sue like doctors, you can sue them for $2 million, but you're only going to get like a couple hundred thousand, something like that. And I'm just wondering if that
for sure, if that was before or after. It was enough of a concern that they were so afraid about the legal implications, like they had no protections.
Yeah. So, okay. That's what makes me wonder if it was around the time that all that started coming about, because that would kind of make sense.
So they depart ways, and another nurse at Somerset, Amy, I would call her Loughran. She actually becomes a huge asset to police, and she was friends with Charles Cullen. She kind of goes on in some articles that I read from interviews with her. She's like, I kind of like idolized him. He's really smart, and I kind of gravitated towards people that were smarter than me and that type of stuff. And so at first she was like, oh my God, he didn't do anything. Like, they're such good friends. Like, he knew secrets of hers. Like, specifically the one I could find was that she had a heart condition that she had been keeping hidden from their employer.
Oh.
And so, like, he knew those secrets. And she knew some secrets of his. Not obviously, not all of them.
Yeah.
And so she was like, no, please, you got this all wrong. He's not doing what you're claiming he's doing. And she's defending him. And then police present her with evidence. And she's like, holy shit, he's doing this.
Oh my God, this poor woman.
Yeah. And so they're able to have Amy visit Charles Cullen. And so she's wearing a wire.
So hell yeah. We love a wire.
Right. They go to a diner after work. Well, after she's off of work, he's unemployed. And with the evidence from the wire, they're finally able to arrest Charles Cullen. It was a probable cause arrest. And so on December 12th, 2003, Charles Cullen is arrested. It was in a restaurant. The authorities grabbed him and they take off with him. And maybe it's just me, but it does seem like a very, very small piece of justice that it was in a public space he was arrested. Like, arrest him in front of all these innocent people. Let them see his face. Yes.
Agreed.
Because you know, if that were today, people would be whipping out their phones like,
he was absolutely in a newspaper.
Right.
Loser. And I hope he was embarrassed. I hope he was angry.
God, the first little piece of justice, right?
Yes.
So he's arrested. And at this point, he's charged with one count of murder and another for attempted murder. And let's just say he was not a tough nut to crack. Arrested December 12th, and on December 14th, he admit to Detective Dan Baldwin and Tim Braun that he did, in fact, murder... I do have a couple patients named, apparently. He did, in fact, murder Florian Gall. And he did also attempt to murder Jung Kyung Han. Both of these were patients at Somerset. Not only does he admit to that, but he also tells them that he murdered as many as 40 patients over his 16-year career as a nurse.
God.
40. As many as, and there could be more. A lot of people speculate there were hundreds.
Because that's just his guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming, too, if he... what's the word? If he sabotaged those, what was it? The bags?
Yeah.
The IV bags?
Yeah. If he
sabotaged those before he left, how do we know he didn't do that to something when he left these 18 other freaking hospitals?
Right. Like, he's doing way too much.
Yeah. Oh.
So he tells them, yeah, I did this and at least 40 other patients. Just tells him everything. So in April 2004, he does plead guilty before Judge Paul W. Armstrong. And specifically, he pleads guilty to killing 13 patients and attempting to kill two others by lethal injection. And this is only for the patients at Somerset.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Now, him pleading guilty was part of a plea deal. He did have to cooperate with authorities. In return for his cooperation, they would not seek the death penalty in any of his other crimes. Which, whole different story.
Ugh.
But they do want to get him talking. He wants to live. And so they want to get justice for all these different families. And here we are. So in May, he would plead guilty to the murder of three more patients. In November, he would plead guilty to killing six patients in Allentown and attempting to kill three more. So during his hearing, though, for Allentown, he was annoying. For whatever reason, he was just sitting and taunting the judge all through the proceedings, and he would chant, "Your Honor needs to, Your Honor, you need to step down. Your Honor, you need to step down. Your Honor, you need to step down.
Sir, you need to shut up.
I bet that's what the judge, after like the 10th time he said it, he's like, "Your defendant, you need to shut up. Your defendant, you need to," or whatever, you know. But he got so fed up, he ordered Charles Cullen to be restrained and gagged.
They can do that?
I guess that's one solution.
I mean, in this situation, I kind of love it.
They were like, "I'm done. We're not hearing you out. We're over this."
Oh, I love it.
So I guess that's just one solution.
That's the picture I want to see. Who's got the cell phone footage?
No one. I couldn't find it. on March 2nd, 2006, he's finally sentenced in New Jersey. So now he's getting sentenced, right? So everything else was just him pleading guilty.
Okay.
So he's sentenced to 18 consecutive life sentences, and he will not be eligible for parole until June 10th, 2403. Like that's
2403.
Yeah.
Like 2403.
Yes.
Awesome.
So that was for the New Jersey in March 2006, March 10th, just days later.
There's more.
He goes to Lehigh County for sentencing there. It's a new state, you know. And Charles Cullen, again, was being annoying during sentencing. He was upset with the judge, and he would just sit and say, "Your Honor, you need to step down. Your Honor, you need to step down."
Oh, my God. It doesn't even have new material.
He did this on repeat for 30 minutes, and Judge William P. Platt was sick of it. And he was like, "Gag him again." And maybe they didn't do it in the most ethical way, because it was with cloth and duct tape.
I'm fine with that. They could have put a dirty sock in them for all I care. Like, one of the bailiffs, the biggest, sweatiest bailiff, could have taken a sock off and shoved it in his mouth, and I would have been okay with it for this guy.
I mean, it's not a great look, but my God, if he would have just shut up, it would have been fine.
Yeah.
But I will say it didn't stop Charles Cullen, because he did keep repeating it through the gag. So, like, he's determined. What? And he was sentenced to an additional 6 life sentences in Pennsylvania. So, yeah. Now, people ask, like, what the hell was his motive? According to him, he was trying to spare these patients from going into cardiac or respiratory arrest. So, he didn't want them listed as, like, a code blue emergency. He wanted to end their suffering. He wanted, this is all him. He wanted to prevent hospital personnel from dehumanizing the patients. And he told detectives that he could not bear to witness or to hear about attempts of other nurses saving a victim's life. Couldn't bear it.
What?
What's really confusing about this is that his patients were not all terminal. He was not only dealing with terminal patients. He was in a rehabilitation center. Like, they're not terminal patients.
I know these trials were only 2 days apart. So he didn't have like much.
8 days apart.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I know this trial, these trials were like a week apart. So he didn't have much time to prepare. But that's the best you could come up with.
Well, that's him telling detectives. That's not him telling the courts. That's him telling detectives.
Oh, okay. This just feels weak. Like this.
Well, yeah.
It doesn't even make sense.
I mean, I didn't say it did. Like I said, his patients were not all terminal. Like, a lot of them were, and this is from interviews with other nurses and stuff. These other nurses would tell them that a lot of these patients were on the mend.
Oh, my God. So, like,
there was no reason for him to be like, oh, my God, they're suffering. Like, no, they're not. They're getting better. So, on top of all of that, police believe, and it is believed, that he actually caused a lot of his patients to suffer before they died from the different overdoses. So, like, not very nice, sir.
So, like, meaning, like, the medicines that he used?
Mm-hmm.
So him saying he was, quote-unquote, trying to help, he tortured them.
Possibly.
Because I assume if you're a nurse, you know which medicines are going to be, like, go to sleep, you know, or suffer.
Right. So, yeah. Not great. Now, Cullen told police that he might have seen some patients suffer for days. Like, he might have seen some of these patients just suffering, ICU, burn, you know, wherever, for days. But he made the decision to murder these people on an impulse. So he didn't, like, see, oh, you're going to suffer, I'm going to kill you. It was like, oh, this guy's fine. And then 3 days later, no, he's gone. So I want to call back, like, this just takes me back to those canceled orders. So he's doing it on an impulse where he's adding the order, canceling, adding, cancel, add, cancel, just within minutes. So that does seem impulsive, and, like, it's maybe he's trying to control that impulse or whatever. I don't know. That's just my theory. That's my interpretation of that.
That's what he told detectives, like, when they were interviewing?
Yes.
I can see that, but I don't want to.
Out of all the shit he said, I do believe that piece to be truthful. I do believe he chose to kill them on an impulse.
Yeah.
However, I'm not saying it's good that he's being honest. Like, maybe he just didn't kill people and we'd all be great in a happy world. It's fine.
That'd be wonderful.
So what Cullen also tells police is that he lived his life in a fog. So here comes some of the bullshit. He lived his life in a fog, and he doesn't really remember everything. He blacked out memories of murdering most of his victims. And he also even denied killing patients at some of the facilities he worked at. He would at least deny it until faced with medical records that implicated him. And then he'd be like, oh, that's right. Let me clear that fog away. I remember now.
Oh, there was actually no fog. It was just me. Yeah,
I remember that patient in 2C, clear as day.
Because I was going to ask, didn't he name two of them?
Yeah, those are the two that he was arrested for, too, though. So they were probably named by police.
Okay, so he didn't name
them. I'm assuming he does, but it's fine. So he's something else. But yeah, so that's what he says his motive was. There could be a lot of theories as to what his motive was. I think it was mostly him being a crap person, and he had a lot of trauma. No one's arguing that, but that's not an excuse to cause trauma to others.
Yeah, a lot of people, unfortunately, suffer trauma, and they don't do this.
Right. So.
I know someone specifically that comes to mind that had a horrible childhood, and you know what? She's a social worker. Completely turned it around.
Exactly.
So, screw this one.
So, now to me, and probably everyone else, the hospital systems also failed all of their patients by not reporting him.
Agree.
And here's the thing, though, is the nurse network is something else. Nurses talk to other nurses at other hospitals. And people heard about his reputation. So those nurses were more than willing to tell their superiors, contact nearby hospitals in secret, do whatever they could to prevent him from getting a job. Obviously, it didn't completely work. Those nurses did what they could. And they mentioned their concerns, you know, and, you know, they say he's possibly harming his patients. And from what I can find, it was so well known. I believe from what I could find, and I'm not 100% sure on this, Cullen got a position in 2001. I believe it was a second position, like a second job he had gotten at Sacred Heart Hospital. And the nurses there revolted. Nope. You're not hiring him. They threatened to quit in mass if Charles Cullen was not dismissed immediately.
That's what I'm talking about. And, okay, so somebody was doing background checks.
Yeah, and in this case, the hospital officials were like, we can't lose any nurses. Bye, Charles, you're not worth it. And they do dismiss him. So, like, the nurses are, they're like, we've heard. We're not doing it.
So, if the nurses have heard, then the hospitals...
Everyone's fucking heard.
Right. So, yeah. It's not like hospitals are just being like, that's kind of suspicious. The hospitals have most likely at least heard from a bird or two. And they're seeing suspicious activity. So you're just turning a whole... That's a full cataract.
Yeah. So the hospitals, why didn't they report him? I already mentioned it. They were... A lot of them were already suspicious of Cullen's actions. But they had very large fears of lawsuits. And so they were like, oh, he's leaving. Bye-bye. Not our problem anymore. They did, however, face lawsuits by the families of the victims after Charles Cullen had been captured. So, like... backfired, turning a blind eye.
You're in this situation regardless.
After Charles Cullen was arrested, 37 total states would adopt new laws that actually encouraged employers to be honest in appraisals of employees. They were now legally protected for reporting medical errors. They were no longer fearing the risk of lawsuit there. And with this came the Patient Safety Act in 2004. This increased hospitals' responsibility for reporting serious preventable adverse events. So, like, you're more responsible as a hospital if something happens, you know. And then this also was the Enhancement Act in 2005 that required hospitals to report certain details to their employees to the New Jersey Division of Consumer Affairs and mandated that complaints and disciplinary records relating to patient care be kept for 7 years. So, like, if an employee had a complaint for patient care, it had to be on file for 7 years. So
I guess depth, some good came of it.
Yeah. Steps from preventing this from happening again. Unfortunately, Cullen has inspired many films. Killer Nurse 2008. He was featured on 60 Minutes where he was interviewed in 2020. The Charles Cullen Killing for Kindness documentary. The Good Nurse in 2020. I think that's supposed to be 2022. I put 2002. That was before he was arrested. 2022, Capturing the Killer Nurse. And I mean, I'm sure there's more. I know there's a book, The Angel of Death. I will tell you, I have watched The Good Nurse. It was several years ago that I watched it. I do remember it being semi-accurate. Okay. I refused to watch the 60 Minutes where he was interviewed. I didn't want to give him the spotlight. And then, yeah, so that's where we're at. And he is in prison and will remain there for the rest of his life.
I was going to ask if you watched the interview, because I'll watch documentaries. Okay. I will watch there's, I don't know how to describe it. There are some people, I don't want to see their interviews. I don't want to see it. And he seems like one of those people because it just makes me so uncomfortable when they talk.
Yeah. Here's my thing is I understand that it's already aired and that, you know, people are watching it all the time. I personally, if it is an interview with the actual person, I'm going to opt not to watch it because I don't want to give them any additional spotlight than what they already have.
Yeah.
So, but that is my story. That is Charles Cullen.
When you told me he was a nurse, I kind of assumed he was going to be one of the, what's the term, angel of death?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, angel of death. Kind of surprised, honestly, because I feel like nurse murderers and or serial killers are usually women. Like, I know there's more than one dude. There's one, I can see his face and I can't think of his name right now. But I feel like, or maybe we just hear more often it's women because nursing is I think they call them pink collar jobs now, where they are majority female roles.
Are you, there's Beverly Elite, Kimberly Clark's thing?
Kimberly Clark's one.
Lucy Letby, Kristen Gilbert, Donald Harvey, Colin Norris. I don't know how to say that one. It's a Finnish nurse, Michael Swingo. Another German nurse. I can't say that name. Efren Saldivar. Those are just the ones on Wikipedia that more known angels of death include.
I'm trying to see, because like I said, I can see his face. But right now, whenever I Google it, everyone that's coming up is Charles Cullen, probably because Google's been listening to our conversation. So. Orville Majors. Orville Lynn Majors.
I don't feel like I've ever heard of him.
I remember him because of this. Look at his face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. But from what I remember, like, his patients loved him. So it was kind of the opposite.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what their deal was. I don't know how he got away with what he did, but he done did it.
I'll cover this guy soon, because okay. Now I know his name, and I can't forget that horrible mugshot.
All right, well, let's move on to your story.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Because I like mine. Mine's fun.
This podcast uses profanity. Oh, no, I don't need to do that.
I was about to say, what are you doing?
Have it.
Where are we going? Leave guys, that in.
This is round two, okay? Round two. Because Bryce effed up, and now we have to record Amanda's story again. So, I mean, I don't remember anything she talked about because I blacked it out on purpose.
The important thing is it wasn't my fault this time. Because it's been my fault multiple times, I think. So.
I don't think we've really had to re-record that much, though, when you think about it.
Yeah, I feel like it's, knock on wood, I feel like it's been a while. So we were due for one.
Yeah, we were due. It's just so, because like the first time I forgot to start recording. Don't you remember that? I was like, we were halfway through and I went, oh my God, I didn't start the recording. And then I tried to use the recording that you had, but it didn't separate our audios and it made it a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think we've had to re-record because of you, but we've had to push back recordings, I think.
We had to re-record back when we were doing the Patreon stuff and the whole video just corrupted and I couldn't get it fixed.
Oh, but that was for a Patreon one. I'm thinking normal.
Oh, okay. No, I've just stolen your stuff, stolen your stories.
Yeah, it's fine. No big deal. NBD. Yeah, no, so this is round two of Amanda's story. So does that make it round three? Because we recorded mine, recorded yours, now recording yours again?
I think so, yeah. Shit, and the third time is the charm, right?
It's fine. We got it. Yeah. It's fine. Everyone's in this time. I'll make sure I get the information I need before it expires this time. God, I'm sorry. Feel the judgment coming from Amanda's end over there.
I feel like I was very supportive.
You were, because when I was like, oh, fuck, last or on Thursday, you were like, it's okay. And I'm like, stop trying to comfort me. Let me have my moment.
Do you want me to just cuss you out next time?
Yes, please.
Okay, gotcha.
Just be like, you dumb bitch, how could you?
I'll try to remember that going the whole, hey, it's no big deal, we could just do it again, is the wrong move.
Wrong move. I didn't want your support. I wanted to be like, holy I had to absorb it and insult myself for a couple minutes because that's how it works before I accepted that we had to re-record.
Okay, gotcha. I'll try to remember that. Next time, I'll start with cuss words.
And then you can be supportive after. Like, if I start crying, just hang up on me.
Okay.
Gotcha. You have to think about that for a second. I saw the thought, like, hold on. If she starts crying, I can't handle. But she said to hang up. It's fine.
Yeah. When someone cries, my brain just immediately shuts down. And I'm like, how do I get out of this situation without being rude?
Well, I just told you to be rude. So it's fine. Don't worry. Don't worry. I will be setting alarms and making sure things don't happen again. In my defense, I'm really exhausted all the time.
Absolutely. You have twins and a full-time job. I would argue more than a full-time job because you're salary, right? So sometimes it goes over and your hours are all over the place.
But yeah. So anyways, we are moving on to Amanda's story.
Again. Excuse me. My allergies.
Anyways, so I've never heard this story. I've heard it once before.
It's been weeks since I wrote it, so we're gonna have a fun time.
Oh, okay, so it's gonna be fun because I don't remember all the details. I black everything out.
I'm sure I'll remember as it comes. So let's jump right into it, shall we? This is the Bleeding House, or the Bleeding House of Atlanta, the Atlanta Blood House. It's a bloody house, guys. Okay.
You're a bloody house. I'm so...
Wow, that was aggressive.
I'm sorry.
Whoa.
Go on, I'm sorry.
I don't even know what to say, anyway.
I don't know where that came from. It just came out. My filter broke for a second there.
That's what caught me off guard, because I was like, are we playing? Are we showing affection right now? What do I...
The filter in my brain just, like, did a reset, and that just slipped out.
Did you sleep well last night?
No.
Okay.
I haven't... Okay. We'll talk next week about it. Don't worry.
Okay. Minnie and Willie Winston, which... Is that not just the cutest freaking names? I love it.
It kind of should be Winnie and Willie, though.
For a long time, I was calling them that in my head, and I had to train myself not to. So if I say that, I'm sorry. But Minnie and Willie Winston, they lived at 1114 Fountain Drive. Now, it was a modest home in Atlanta, Georgia. And at the time of this story, the Winstons had been married for 44 years.
A long ass time.
A long time. And as if that wasn't long enough, they had lived in this house, specifically rented this house, for over 20 of those years.
I don't know why they rented for that long.
I attributed that to Atlanta. And I don't know. Maybe the rent was reasonable too. And they were like up there in age. They were both retired. So it makes sense for retired people to rent, because then you don't have to worry about, you know, if something breaks, someone fixes it. You don't have to cut the grass. Sometimes I've had places where I've rented houses where I did, but they had three children, but all of their children were grown and moved out and doing their own thing in life. So the house itself was like pretty quiet. All of them. Minnie was 77. She was a retired school teacher, but currently she had taken on the role of a caretaker for her husband, William Willie Winston. He wasn't doing. He was 79 years old, and he could still get around the house, but he wasn't necessarily spry. He had grown frail in his old age, and he was in poor health. He had bad kidneys, and so he had to have dialysis. They actually had a dialysis machine in their home.
Which, that seems pretty intense, to have like an actual dialysis machine in their own home.
I thought so too, especially like this is the late 80s. So I feel like now it may not be that crazy, but having, this was specifically 1987 that this happened. So 1987, to have a dialysis machine in your house, that feels, like you said, intense. I feel like that's a good word.
Yeah.
So he, like I said, he could get around, but he did spend a lot of time in bed, because that's where the dialysis machine was in his bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
So September 8th, 1987, this night, the Winstons had started to get ready to turn in for the night, so they locked up the house, they set the alarm, and Willie goes to bed. Winnie, she decided that she wanted to take...
Minnie.
I said Winnie, didn't I? Son of a biscuit. Yeah. I just made up a new person. There's no... Minnie decided that she wanted to take a relaxed bath, you know, kind of wind down for the day. It was unclear when she got in the bath, but she got out at about 11:30 p.m. And when she stepped out of the bathtub, she would later describe feeling something wet under her feet, like she had stepped in something wet.
I hate that feeling of my feet being wet. Hate it.
Especially when you just got out of the shower.
Or just put socks on.
Oh, disgusting.
The worst.
Absolute vomit. Like, I'm pissed. Especially when I'm getting ready for work in the morning and James is at home and I'm by myself trying to get me and the kids ready. Lee has a habit of picking up both of them, but he loves the water bowl. And he'll bring it to me, which, like, thanks, that's precious, but please, for the love of God, don't do that. Because now there's water all throughout the house.
Yeah, I was going to say a water trail from wherever the dog bowl is to wherever you are.
Oh, no, it's not a trail, because he has a large dog bowl, because the dog and the cat both use the same water bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So when I found out she was using it, I made it bigger. Made it bigger? I built a bigger bowl.
You bought a bigger bowl or built a bigger bowl?
Well, I said I made it bigger. Like, I just waved my wand and poof, add a gallon. I placed a larger bowl on the floor. So there are days when I'll, like, I'm running, stressed to get dressed. I'm stressed to get dressed and out the door, and I just put on socks, and before I can get to the door for my shoes, I step in the water, and I'm like, someone's going to timeout. It might be me, honestly. I might need
it. Just go to timeout and be in the corner where it can be maybe silent. Big maybe.
What were we talking? Oh, okay, sorry. He gets out of the bathtub, and she steps in something wet. She said it was slicker than water and sticky.
I hate that.
I'm angry for her. So she looked down and she said there was something red spraying up through a hole in the tile floor, and she described it as being like a sprinkler, which ruined my childhood, by the way.
I hate that description.
She said at first, like, she wasn't really scared because she didn't know what it was. She was, like, confused.
She's, like, checking the water lines, like, what could that be?
Yeah, like, trying to figure out, like, where is this coming from? But she's like, you know, if it's red, it can't be water. And then she realized this looked a lot like blood. Most sources say that from here, she went to the bedroom to check on her husband. There were another few sources that said that she just kind of called out to him from across the house.
Mm-hmm.
But most sources said that she went to him, woke him up, and said, come look at this stuff coming from the floor.
I mean, I would have done that too. I would have called from across the house. I would have been like,
absolutely.
I need to keep my eyes on this so that I continue to see it.
Yeah, get up, come here. I'm more inclined to believe that since he was in bad health and he was in bed, she probably went to him and got him up. But so now that they're both awake and aware of what's going on, they had to figure out what's going on. Because now there were spots of blood ranging in size from a dime to a silver dollar. For people that may not know U.S. currency, because I know silver dollars aren't really all that common. The size of a silver dollar
is 1.5 inches in diameter, or 38.1 millimeters. Now, dime is significantly smaller. A dime is 0.705 inches, or 17.91 millimeters in diameter. So we've got a pretty wide range of these blood drops in this house. And they weren't just in the bathroom now. They found these in the hall, in the kitchen, in the living room, under the television. And in one of the pictures, the picture with Minnie and Willie, you can see the television in the background is one of those old, huge, heavy, heavy TVs.
Well, yeah, we would expect that because of the time frame.
So, like, how did blood get under there? We don't know. They also found blood in the crawl space under the house. And this crawl space specifically was so narrow, it was almost inaccessible.
It's still so weird to me that they checked the crawl space. But then I guess maybe they were looking at, like, pipes, trying to see what it was.
Yeah, that's what I saw. They were looking at maybe, like, pipes. They were looking for a creature or an animal that could have gotten in there and was hurt. So, I mean, what do you do in this situation? I'm not really sure. I probably would have done what they did. They called 911. And I guess told them there was blood throughout their... I would have loved to hear that 911 call. Would have loved to hear how that went.
Can you imagine being the dispatcher and be like, so wait, there's blood in your house, but you don't know how it's there.
Yes. Because he did say, Willie did say, like, neither him nor his wife were hurt. So, and they don't have pets. So, like, I don't think they have training on that. I would love to know if they had training on it now.
They might now.
Yeah. EMTs were dispatched to the home, but like I said, they found no injuries. And they also checked Willie's dialysis machine, but that was fine too.
So I don't understand how that would get like all over the house.
That's my thing. Like, if his dialysis machine is in the bedroom, those machines are pretty large now. Again, can't imagine what they were in the 80s. Like, you just wheeling it around the house, dripping blood. Did you move the TV? Put the dialysis machine there and put it back? Like, how?
Like, that would be a process, and don't you think they would notice, and it wouldn't be wet blood? It would be, some of it would be dried?
That's what I would think. But, I also understand them, like, hey, let's just check it. Like, let's see. Maybe they check to see if, I don't know, if had blood, like, what if is there a hole in the bag? I don't know.
Maybe they were like, maybe we can figure out this room first.
Yeah. Yeah, they started there. And like, if this person has a dialysis machine and there's blood drops throughout their house, that's a fair place to start.
But also, like, I still don't understand. Like, I don't feel like the dialysis machines were that mobile.
Yeah, I wouldn't think
so. I don't know. Look, I could be wrong. I'm not in healthcare. I'm not a healthcare professional. Mm-hmm. And I am certainly not on dialysis, so I don't know.
Healthcare professionals? Is that a thing? Is that possible?
Are dialysis machines?
Are you asking Google or George?
You mean Greg?
That's what I said.
They are now relatively mobile, and I'm asking Google.
Okay. Greg, by the way, guys, is what we call ChatGPT. Greg Paul Thomas.
It says nowadays they're pretty mobile. They say relatively mobile.
So I'm hearing still not.
I'm hearing more mobile than back then.
So back then they were probably kind of not at all.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So when EMTs can't find anything, police are called out early the next morning. Homicide Detective Steve Cartwright said that he was confident there was a natural explanation for this. And once they got the facts, this would be demystified, which I thought was a great word.
Demystified. Okay.
Investigators, they found no signs of a break-in, no bodies, no signs of a struggle or a fight, no signs of like domestic violence. They did find copious amounts of blood.
hate that word. I still hate that word.
I was wondering if you were going to remember the little tangent that we went on last time.
Copiously disgusting.
Yes.
Hate that description.
I feel like nobody uses that word except law enforcement.
You know what? Can we all start copiously using the term
copious? Can we be more copious with the copious?
Can you copious copified copium?
Can we keep it copacetic?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
So they did find copious amounts of blood. It was splashed on walls and floors of 5 different rooms in the house. Police speculated that the blood had come from a wounded animal loose in the house, but they found nothing. And they, too, suspected Willie's dialysis machine. But as I said earlier, it was fine. So another dead end there that we have already been to, and then we looped around the cul-de-sac and came back to it.
Mm-hmm.
State crime labs, they were called to the scene as well. And Bryce, they brought tea to this scene. The tea, like the hot tea, the hot goss. An article that I found in the Atlanta Constitution from September 12th, 1987 was titled, 13 hours passed before crime lab was told of blood.
Hold on, wait, say that one more time.
13 hours passed before the crime, excuse me, 13 hours passed before crime lab was told of blood.
Understand, first of all, I understand that the 13 hours was likely because they were like, this isn't blood, this is an animal, this is a human, you know, they were doing an investigation, but like nowadays, I hope that the crime lab is notified immediately, and then they can continue their investigation.
Like, I can understand, I can see, and I can understand their thought process. I agree with you. Like, they go there, and there's like, there has to be an explanation for this. But also, if you get there, and you're like, huh, this is a lot of blood, maybe just call them anyway?
I mean, I don't know, but I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah. I mean, I doubt they would be upset.
They made. I would be.
They made sure to write that the state crime lab director, Harry Howard, was not criticizing police procedure. But he also said that they would have gotten a better, faster, and more complete analysis from wet blood instead of the dried blood they found when they were finally called to the scene. And in
now it's dry blood.
Yeah, now it is dried. In their defense in this article, police were basically like, we thought it was an animal.
Which, in their defense, yeah, I would too.
Yeah.
And everyone in the home is fine. And there's no evidence of any foul play at all.
Yep, no break-in. The alarm was set and never tripped. Which I feel like even if it was an animal, there's still a pretty high likelihood that it would trip an alarm.
And it somehow got in.
Yeah. Now, the police did send a sample of this to a hospital. And that hospital confirmed, this is human blood. It's not an animal. And when the hospital was like, yeah, this is human blood, they were like, oh, we should get the crime lab in. And that's when they called them. So, Howard, he was able to test the samples. And the samples were an O blood type. But both Minnie and Willie were A.
So there's no way it was theirs.
Right.
So that automatically rules out the dialysis machine.
Yep. And I would argue, like, if they're both A, that also rules out their children.
That's true.
He also stated that based on blood patterns and splatters, it looked like this blood had either projected out of something or had been shaken off of something. Which is kind of interesting so since she saw it. Yeah. Because, like, what are you... I guess, like, if you cut your finger and you're like, ow, you know, and you shake it, that would kind of make sense, but...
No one cut
you gotta
finger.
Really cut your finger to sling...
Blood.
What did I say a silver dollar was? An inch in diameter amount of blood? Mm-hmm. Like a drop that large?
Right.
In another article dated October 24th of 1987, Willie allegedly claimed that there was never any blood in the home.
Willie.
What's he said the substance was actually red dye from one of their rugs and that it was water damage from leaky pipe.
Willie, what's going on? Didn't you guys call 911?
Yeah, they did. And in this article, they also mentioned that Willie and Minnie were both tired of calls from news and media. They said they couldn't sleep at night because the phone rang at all hours with people wanting details.
Lose my absolute... My phone would be unplugged.
That's my thing. Just unplug it.
And for those of you youngins, Mill, I know she's not listening to this part, but for those of you that don't know what we mean by unplug it, landlines, okay? We're not talking let your phone die. No.
Yeah.
We're saying unplug the physical landline.
Mm-hmm. You know how you have to plug an HDMI cord into the computer like that, but a phone and a wall?
And the phone won't work without the cord.
Right.
Which, it's funny that we say that, because you know that everyone listening that's younger is like, well, no shit, Sherlock. We know what it is.
I don't know that. I've met some pretty naive and sweet, sweet Gen Zers.
Well, here's the thing is, do we really have a lot of Gen Z listeners? I think most of our group is millennials and my dad.
Well, then
do you like how I threw that in there?
He's his
millennials
own.
And my dad.
And I grandpa. Feel like they'll understand the humor in it then.
Yeah.
Because I vividly remember there is a phone, because our house is very old, there's still an outlet for a phone plug in the wall in the kitchen. And Jack saw it once and he's like, what is that? And me and James were like, ugh. Okay, Jack. Ugh. That was unnecessary.
You're like, that was just rude. You don't have to say mean things.
Yeah. When he said that, my back and my knees immediately started hurting.
Everything was just reminding you of everything.
Yes. I'm old. Thanks a lot, son. The Winstons, now they weren't the only ones suffering from the influx of phone calls either. The local media, the radio station, television station, and the police were all swamped with phone calls. And this ranged from people asking, basically calling up, I guess, the police and being like, is this real? Because let me tell you, police enjoy those phone calls. To psychics claiming they could remove the blood from the house. Now, the state crime lab, they were never able to identify the blood, and police were never able to identify where it was coming from. So, it seems like they had come to the conclusion that it was done either as a prank by the couple, who was older in age, you know, and maybe wanted attention from their grown children. Or it was done by the children to have the parents declared legally incompetent. Investigators claim that the Winstons would have done it themselves, since Willie is a dialysis patient. I don't really know what that meant. They didn't really elaborate on it. I guess, like, maybe sometimes dialysis patients get blood and add it to... I don't really know. I thought the point of dialysis was to filter your own blood, but I suppose it's not impossible to, you know, get a donation or something. And, like, that would kind of make sense because O is universal. So, I guess I kind of see their thought process there. They also claim that one of their children, their daughter, worked in a hospital, so she would also have access to human blood.
But why would you risk taking human blood and getting caught?
That's my thing. Like, why? Because their parents, it's not like they wanted the house, you know, because they rented this house. So what would you gain from having them declared legally incompetent? Maybe they have a savings account or something, but also, like, I don't know how I feel about police, like, throwing these, I don't want to say accusations around, but
they're theories.
Yeah, neither of them were ever proven. So I feel like you're kind of just throwing the kids under the bus when you have no proof that that's what happened. And we all know, like, public opinion can do a lot. Most people believe that it was probably a poltergeist. But even then, if this was a poltergeist, they lived in this house over 20 years. Why did this happen then?
It only happened once, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Why did it happen then? And why was there nothing else?
Look, I have a theory.
Okay, I'm listening.
I don't think it was a poltergeist. I don't. Okay. I think it was an alternate reality that clashed.
Uh-huh.
So, like, our reality and a different one clashed. And something in the other reality was happening, and there was blood of another person that lived there. And then when they clashed, like, just, you know, mm-hmm. we got part of it, they got part of it. You know what I mean?
You mentioned that last time, and I really like that theory. I think that's
I'm still super thinking that's what happened.
Because it doesn't even have to be in the past. It could be something that happened in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And they just got stuck in, like, that little
loop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So sometime after all this took place, it eventually did die down. Now, it's still well known and talked about, but many insisted there was no blood in that house. She would later tell people that it was just rust and mud. She would also say that it was the leaky water from rusty pipes, which, I mean, that makes complete sense. Like, it rusty water, it can look like blood, but I feel like you still know the difference. And I don't think rusty water is going to be sticky either. Some people claim that they convinced themselves of this. Many told one source that if it was blood, she couldn't have been able to stay in that house.
So she's in very deep denial.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like possibly both of them, her and Willie. Because, like, I kind of feel her. Like, I wouldn't want to stay in that house if that happened.
I agree.
That's, especially if I don't have an explanation for it. That's, no thank you. Just no thank you. Willie Winston, he died just 2 years after this incident. And Winnie passed in 2015. She lived to be 104 years old.
She is so old. How did she do it?
Well, for one, she convinced herself that there was no blood in her house. I think that helped.
That's fair. That I would be doing that too. Like how I convinced myself there's no ghost.
Absolutely. But that's the story of Willie and Minnie Winston and the Bleeding House of Atlanta.
I didn't like it the first time. I don't like it the second time.
Did you remember any of it, or are you pretty
I did.
Much...
I did. I was just trying really hard to ignore it.
You're trying really hard not to remember it?
Yeah. But that's kind of where I was, because I was like, and I remembered the alternate realities theory. I was waiting very patiently to say it again. but like, I don't know how I'd feel if all of a sudden my house started bleeding. I don't have a Band-Aid big enough for that.
Yeah, I don't. And like, what do you do? Do you just clean it up and move on with your life?
That's what they did. That's what
Minnie
and Willie did.
I less than like it. I'm not a fan.
Hate it, but that's just me. All right. Well, thank you for tuning in to Hell in Heels Podcast. Want to see pictures from today's episode? You can follow us on Instagram at Hell in Heels Podcast, X Hell in Heels Pod, or on Facebook by searching Hell in Heels Podcast. You can also find us on Linktree by typing in Hell in Heels Podcast. If you want to support us, be sure to like, review, rate, share, and subscribe on your favorite listening platform. If you have your own true crime or paranormal stories, or just words of encouragement, send them our way at hellandhillspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you again for listening. Don't forget to tell your friends to listen as well. Bye.
Bye.